title are just as important. Orchestrated means that orderly brain activity is being controlled from the very origins of the brain at a microscopic level. This is attractive because a basic quality of consciousness is orderly, organized thinking. Objective is important because scientists want to preserve the assumption that anything in creation, including consciousness, must be explainable by physical, that is, objective, processes. In our view, this assumption falls apart when it comes to the inner world of human experience. We don't accept that mind needs the quantum. Penrose and Hameroff took a bold step delving into quantum biology, and it is likely that future theories, or a future revision of ORC-OR, will continue to examine the brain at this level. From our perspective, one particular advantage of ORC-OR is its assertion that the human mind cannot be computed through mathematical formulas. In other words, no matter how predetermined the firing of a neuron is, the thoughts that neurons process are not predetermined. Hameroff and Penrose arrive at this conclusion through some sophisticated quantum reasoning, along with hints from philosophy and advanced logic. But the upshot is fairly simple. No mechanical model will ever explain how humans think. A great deal of confusion and inevitable dead ends would be avoided if other scientists took this point to heart. Like it or not, our minds are on dual control. Sometimes we are the ones in control, sometimes a totally unknown force is in control. This isn't hard to see. If you are asked to add 2 plus 2, you can call up the necessary mental process to arrive at the right answer, because you are in control. There are millions of similar tasks, such as knowing your own name, how to do your job, what it takes to drive a car home from work. And these give us the illusion that we control our own minds all the time. But someone suffering from anxiety or depression is the victim of uncontrolled mental activity, and lack of control can go much further, as in mental illness, for example. A common symptom of various psychoses, particularly paranoid schizophrenia, is the belief that an outside agent is controlling the patient's mind, usually through an alien voice heard in the head. A normal person doesn't usually feel out of control mentally, but if it were really true that we have control over our thoughts, we'd call up any thought we wanted to have, the way you can call up a Google search. And this is far from the case. Love at first sight is a pleasant way to be out of control, and so is the experience of artistic inspiration. We can only imagine the joy of Rembrandt or Mozart in the throes of creating a masterpiece. So dual control has its good and bad side. Life would be robotic if we didn't have flashes of emotion that come of their own accord, along with bright ideas of every kind. What if this everyday fact of life turns out to be the key to the cosmos? Human beings might be a bright idea the universe had, and once the idea occurred to it, cosmic mind decided to run with it. Why? What's so enticing about human beings, troublesome and pained as we are? Only one thing. We allowed the universe to be aware of itself in the dimension of time and space. In other words, at this very moment, the cosmos is thinking through you. Whatever you happen to be doing, riding a bike, eating a Reuben sandwich, making a baby, is a cosmic activity. Take away any stage in the evolution of the universe, and this very moment vanishes into thin air. As astounding as such a claim may be, this audiobook has been building up to it all along. Quantum physics makes it undeniable that we live in a participatory universe. Therefore, it's only a small step to say that the participation is total. Our minds are fused with the cosmic mind. The only reason it took so long to arrive at this conclusion is that old bugaboo, stubborn materialism. As long as you look upon the brain as a thinking machine, there cannot be a cosmic mind, because in physicalist terms, no brain equals no mind. The obstacle couldn't be more intractable. To remove the obstacle and allow the human mind to fuse with cosmic mind, we must address the mystery of how the brain is related to the mind. There's no way around it. The first person who called the human brain the 3.5-pound universe created an indelible image. If the brain is a unique physical object that functions like a supercomputer, then the physicalists have won. But there is no reason to elevate the atoms and molecules inside our brains to special status. If every particle in the cosmos is governed, created, and controlled by the mind, the brain also functions as the mind dictates. That's the key to solving this, our last mystery. Grasping the mystery. It's amazingly difficult to figure out what the brain actually does. If nature has a sense of humor, this is the ultimate prank. Keeping the brain under wraps, even though the mind is using it at every moment. You can't figure out how a neuron works simply by thinking about it. Indeed, you can't even figure out that neurons exist. We don't see or feel our brain cells. With the dawn of X-rays, fMRI scans, and sophisticated surgical techniques, neuroscience can make the brain's machinery visible. There it sits, twinkling away with microvolts of electricity, zapping a few molecules of neurotransmitters across the synapses. And yet, for all intents and purposes, brain cells act like all the other cells in the body. Even skin cells secrete various neurotransmitters. So why do you have to open your eyes to see the sunrise instead of just holding up your elbow to see it? No one has managed to close the gap between what a brain cell does, bouncing atoms and molecules around, and the rich four-dimensional world that the brain manages to produce. To get around this fundamental difficulty, reality has to be rethought from the ground up. Equating the brain with a computer is a common assumption that can be thrown out almost immediately. Let's say you saw a lovely pink rose named Queen Elizabeth and decide to plant one in your garden. When you arrive at the nursery, the rose's name skips your mind. But after a moment, you recall it. If instead you asked your smartphone to find the right name, it would go through every single pink rose in its memory chips. And as it undertook this laborious process, it would never know that Queen Elizabeth was the correct name until you told it so. Computers are in no way smart. Worldwide publicity surrounded the 1997 defeat of the reigning world chess champion Garry Kasparov by a computer program from IBM known as Deep Blue. The two, man and machine, had been exchanging wins and losses for 2 years, and Deep Blue's ultimate victory was hailed as a step forward for artificial intelligence. But that's exactly the point. What the computer did was artificial. In a sophisticated software program that IBM continually refined and updated, the basic operation was to comb through every possible chess move in order to arrive at the one that was statistically likely to be the best. So, in a sense, Kasparov versus Deep Blue was a contest between humans on both sides, but with vastly different approaches. A human chess player doesn't remotely follow this procedure. Instead, the skill of playing chess has been mastered, and with this mastery comes a sense of strategy, imagination, and the ability to assess one's opponent, and many wins are due as much to psychological mastery as to skill. A champion sees the right move without running through all possible moves. Deep Blue, in fact, couldn't play chess in the first place. It could only run numbers and play the odds. The main reason this roundabout strategy worked in the end was that the programmers resorted to shortcuts that imitated how the human mind works. but the computer had no way of coming up with such shortcuts on its own. In effect, calling Deep Blue intelligent is the same as calling an adding machine intelligent, and equally off the mark. Likewise, human beings experience a world of inner experiences like love, joy, inspiration, discovery, surprise, boredom, anguish, and frustration that cannot be turned into numbers. Therefore, the whole inner world is alien to computers. Hardcore AI experts tend to dismiss the inner world as a kind of glitch or even an illusion. If so, that would make the entire history of art and music an illusion, along with every act of imagination and all emotions. And in the final analysis, science itself, since science is also a creative process. Clearly, the mind can't be digitized. Therefore, turning the brain into a supercomputer is fallacious, since everything it does is digitized. Five reasons computers are mindless. Minds think. Computers massage digits. Minds understand concepts. Computers understand nothing. Minds worry, doubt, self-reflect, and await insight. Minds have feelings. Computers spit out answers based on crunching numbers. Minds ask why. Computers ask nothing unless ordered to by someone with a mind. Minds navigate through the world by having experiences. Computers have no experiences. They run software. Nothing more, nothing less. In fact, the computer model of the brain has risen to prominence only because previous models proved to be so inadequate. We can briefly tour the junkyard of rusted-out models, noting along the way why each contains a fatal flaw as it attempts to explain the mind as a brain operation. Denial. This is ground zero, the claim that only the brain exists, the mind being a byproduct that has no reality on its own. Deniers have one great advantage. They can go about business as usual without bothering with the mind. That's an appealing prospect to many. After all, they say, the practical business of a science doesn't need to talk about the mind. It needs to do experiments and collect data. There's also soft denial, which says that the mind exists, but it's a given, like oxygen in the air. Both are necessary, yet you can do science for a lifetime without needing to refer to them. The fatal flaw in denial. Deniers can't explain many things, notably the mind-like behavior of quantum particles and the observer effect. The fact that consciousness changes the quantum world is just as practical as any other scientific fact. Therefore, leaving mind out of the argument isn't viable. There's also the unavoidable way that mind and matter are constantly interacting in the brain. Thoughts give rise to chemicals, and vice versa. No one could seriously call that unreal. Passive perception. Another camp admits that the mind is real, but limited. The brain knows the world through the five senses, acting as a data collector. This viewpoint is appealing because science itself is all about data. Like a point-and-shoot camera, the brain is passive, but very accurate. It brings an object into focus, and trusting this picture, along with the other four senses, is good enough. If you need better data, something science can't do without, there are always better telescopes and microscopes to extend our vision to regions the eye alone cannot see. The fatal flaw in passive perception. All the microscopes, telescopes, X-ray machines, and every other instrument created to act as passive perceivers do not perceive anything without the human mind to interpret them. The minds that constructed these devices didn't do it passively. The creativity of consciousness was involved, which goes far beyond mere data collection. complexity equals consciousness. This camp has an expanded view of the mind as a very complex phenomenon. In fact, complexity can help us understand how the primitive nervous system of worms, fish, and reptiles evolved into the infinite richness of the human brain. The appeal of complexity theory is that it skirts the thorny issue of how dead matter somehow learned to think and light up on a brain scan. Matter is matter, period. But over the course of billions of years, simple atoms and molecules evolved into incredibly complex structures. The most complex of these structures are associated with life on Earth. If life is the byproduct of complexity, then by the same logic, the properties of living things can be traced to their complexity. For example, one-celled organisms floating in pond water will seek the light, and from this primitive response, all visual systems evolved, including the eagle's eye, which can spot the movement of a mouse from hundreds of feet in the air. Likewise, everything the human brain can do has an ancestral origin in creatures that do it less well, the way chimpanzees use rudimentary tools, and honeybees dance in a pattern that maps out where the best source of pollen is. In a world of ever-evolving complexity, the human brain sits at the apex as the crown jewel. Complexity gave the brain its abilities, including thought and rationality. The fatal flaw in complexity equals consciousness. No one has ever shown how complexity explains the attributes of life. As we mentioned before, adding more cards to a deck doesn't mean that the deck will suddenly learn how to play poker. Taking primitive bacteria and throwing more molecules at them doesn't explain how the first cells came into being, and certainly not how these cells learned complex behaviors. The zombie hypothesis. This camp is marginalized, but has gained media attention from its catchy name and the publicized efforts of one staunch advocate, philosopher Daniel Dennett. The basic premise is deterministic. Every brain cell operates by fixed principles of biochemistry and electromagnetism. Neurons exist without choice or free will. They are trapped and conditioned by the laws of nature. Therefore, since every person is the product of brain cells, each of us is essentially a puppet dependent on physical processes we have no control over.